It is a beautiful morning in Northeast Iowa, and it looks like the crowd at the World Pork Expo in Des Moines will see a wonderful final day. We've got ground to cover today, a high-level conversation on Prop 12. We'll get ready for next week's RVOs, and we'll get ready for today's USDA Supply and Demand Report.
Live from the Friday free-for-all that ain't via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Brian Humphreys of the National Pork Producers Council. Then it's Kurt Kovarik from Clean Fuels Alliance America. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out where you were going with that there, and that's right. It's kind of not. It's kind of not a free-for-all. And the thing is, Prop 12 is such an important conversation right now, especially with everything that is happening at the World Pork Expo. And we had that conversation with Brian Humphreys yesterday afternoon down at the World Pork. And we've got to get it out there for you. You've got to hear what Brian has to say about Prop 12, about the potential for a legislative fix to Prop 12, and what they are doing between now and July 1.
Wow.
When implementation is expected to take place. And I've got a little more talk about Prop 12 in this segment at the end of this segment after the news that I want to get to as well. So,
okay.
And then another big happening is coming next week. We've got the release of the RVOs from EPA, the Renewable Volume Obligations. Court-ordered deadline, June 14th. There are meetings scheduled between now and Tuesday, June 13th, which certainly suggests to me that the final decision will be made on the 13th and will be announced on the 14th. We need to get ready for that. And so Kurt Kovarik from Clean Fuels Alliance America is the guy to do that for us. So, and then at the end of the show, we'll get you ready for the supply and demand report that's coming out at 11 o'clock Central Time this morning.
Bro,
this is
the kind of stuff that we should, like, you know, broadcast to as many people as possible.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's what we should do.
Oh, buddy, that is exactly what we are doing. You know, before we get to the news, let's see. Let's take a look at this one. Farmers know that they can tune to AM radio for the latest agriculture news, like we're about to get, markets, which we'll get at the bottom of the hour, weather, which we can talk about anytime you want to, and other information. Why do you listen? Let us know. Go to whyilisten.com to tell us. And you could win $500. Thank you to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting for that effort. Davis, news.
Yes. Chip, USDA will likely raise its forecasts for old and new crop ending stocks for both corn and soybeans in the WASDE report coming up in less than an hour. Pro Farmer expects cuts to old crop use, which will push up carryover and likely trickle down through the 23-24 balance sheets, Chip.
Yeah, we'll have the average trade expectations for you at the end of the show.
In comments submitted to the Department of Ag, RCAF USA requested the agency immediately withdraw its proposal to allow the import of fresh beef from Paraguay. USDA has recently proposed a rule seeking to allow the import of fresh beef from Paraguay. Historically, the United States has not engaged in trade of beef from Paraguay amid foot and mouth disease outbreaks.
You know, it's not very often that you see the major cattle groups lining up in agreement, but there's agreement on this one. There's just too much risk with foot and mouth disease in Paraguay to even seriously consider the import of chilled beef. Doesn't make sense.
Well, Chip, Clean Fuels Alliance America and 75 industry stakeholders delivered a letter to President Joe Biden on Thursday, urging the president to ensure that the Environmental Protection Agency substantially increases the biomass-based diesel and advanced biofuels volumes in the renewable fuel standards for 2023, 24, and 25. Imagine we'll get some more on this in a little bit, Chip.
That's exactly what we're going to talk about with Kurt Kovarik.
On Thursday, President Joe Biden and UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced their intention to improve collaboration between the United States and the UK on the extraction and processing of critical minerals, which are vital components used in electric vehicle batteries. Chip, in a somewhat related note, the effort to reset global steel supply chains is facing challenges as President Biden proposes a plan to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum imports based on their greenhouse gas emissions during production. The Wall Street Journal reports that this plan, called the Global Arrangement on Sustainable Steel and Aluminum, would first apply to EU countries before expanding to other allies. What do you make of this one, Chip?
The thing about global arrangements is it seems like a lot of the heavy lifting is left to the United States, and I just don't know.
Well, China's ag ministry made few changes to its supply and demand balance sheets this month, including no adjustments to its corn, soybean, and cotton production or import forecasts. The Russian deputy foreign minister said a blast that damaged an ammonia pipeline between Russia and Ukraine would be considered during talks on the Black Sea grain deal. Russia has repeatedly said resuming ammonia flows through the pipeline is one of the stipulations for it remaining in the deal. Yeah. In other news, wildfire smoke from Canada has covered the northeast U.S., affecting areas like Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and parts of the Carolinas. Caused thousands of flight delays between Wednesday and Thursday and prompted the cancellation of sporting events and a shift to online learning for some schools. Health officials have issued warnings about the poor air quality resulting from the smoke. Chip.
Dude, I'm going to send you a picture that a buddy of mine sent me from Citi Field. Okay. He lives in New York. He comes on crop tour. Okay, good. Greg. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Greg.
But I'm going to send it to you, and I'm going to ask Greg if I can go ahead and post it out on Twitter, because Citi Field on Wednesday looked like the surface of Mars. I kid you not. I'll send it to you. It blows me away. Blows Chip, me away. Yes.
In another note, there was a rumor floating around at World Pork Expo. Do you want to address that, or shall we take care of that later?
I want to address it right now, and thank you. The rumor that was floating around, and it was floating around for good reason, because someone basically said on stage that California is talking about a six-month delay before implementing Prop 12. Now, I checked with NPPC officials about that, and NPPC officials told me that California Department of Ag officials told them that that is not the case, that implementation will be happening on July 1. I am not saying that the official at the California Department of Ag didn't fill the NPPC officials with a load of crap, okay, and that it could happen. But as of right now, I think we need to move forward as if Prop 12 is going to be implemented on July 1. And then we need to get ready for implementation of the Massachusetts rule Q3, which is even more ridiculous than Prop 12. So we'll discuss all of that with Brian Humphrey, CEO of NPPC, next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
More than just a fly control product, Clarifly Larvicide gives you more support, more expertise, more control, and less work. Clarifly Larvicide is perfectly blended into your mineral supplement to become a part of what you're already doing, feeding your swine. Improve the biosecurity of your swine operation and get control of flies by as much as 96% with Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products. Visit centralflycontrol.com to learn more or contact your local feed dealer.
Tyrannus Acre Forward Solutions put the story of your grower's fields at your fingertips. From early season emergence insights to weeds and disease pressures to late season crop threats. That's how we help growers grow. Tyrannus Acre Forward.
Want to see how Tyrannus can drive more value from your acres? Visit acreforward.com.
This is Andrew McCray, host of The American Countryside. I'm also a farmer and rancher from Northwest Missouri, and I hope you'll join me each week for Farming the Countryside as we take a look at the top issues impacting agriculture as told by the people farming and working in our industry. We'll talk about markets and trade, share some of the latest tips and trends from grain and livestock producers, and take a look at trends impacting rural America. Join me for Farming the Countryside on many local radio stations or on your favorite podcast platform, or just go to farmingthecountryside.com.
Why do you listen?
I just want to stay informed while I'm on the go.
News on the radio, it's nice because it's just a quick snippet and I don't have to go searching for it or grab a paper.
I listen to radio because anywhere that I'm going, I'm listening to music or I'm listening to a talk show or I'm just trying to stay up on current events.
I always turn into the radio to see if I need to take shelter, where it's hitting, to see what I need to be preparing for.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. Yesterday, we were at the World Pork Expo. Merck Animal Health provided us with a spot to have a conversation with Brian Humphreys. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the National Pork Producers Council. Brian, thank you so much for making some time. It's a busy couple of 3 days, isn't it?
Absolutely it is, but we're glad that you're all here, but more importantly, we're glad that the pork producers are willing to show up here and not only for the talking to one another and the conversations, but to meet with the vendors and talk about how they can improve their operations.
And they showed up, Brian.
Absolutely. Been a tremendous crowd. Yesterday was fantastic. Today appears to be the same. You know, and yesterday I started off the morning and didn't see the smoke rolling out there, and I walked in, I couldn't smell pork. I was a little nervous. Rain clouds went by. Turned out we just need a bit more time for the smoke to roll.
So. I said the same thing yesterday on Wednesday on the show. I was disappointed that I couldn't. I've made up for it. Let's put it that way.
It's almost like I listened to your podcast, Chip.
Love it very much. All right. So just give me your overall impressions. I mean, it hasn't been a crowd like this at World Pork Expo for a while. It's an important meeting, and it's one that NPPC puts a lot of effort into.
100%. And it's a labor of love, right? We've got pork producers from all over the country and actually all over the world. Got folks in from foreign countries as well. They come and join us. They talk to the vendors. They talk to one another. They talk about how to improve their operations. And they gain insights and new practices and behaviors. Yeah. The symposiums that we have going on are phenomenal. Great opportunity to learn and to network here. And reality is we couldn't do this without the support of our sponsors and without the support of our vendors, but most importantly, without the support of our producers out there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, you had a policy panel to discuss the priorities for NPPC, and you put out a list of it. It included advocating for public policy. Put some meat on that bone for me. What exactly does that mean?
Absolutely. And first off, love using the phrase, put some meat on the bone in the pork industry. So we appreciate that. Well, first off, NPPC is the global voice for the U.S. pork industry. We are the ones that talk to the producers, gain the insights and knowledge of what do they want, what do they need, and how do we go out and drive that. And that comes down to everything from foreign animal disease, prevention and preparedness, and working with the Farm Bill to get those priorities included. market exports and ensuring that we have access to foreign markets for our product, talking about port disruptions like what we're facing out west.
Yeah.
It's about advocating on the needs for the needs on behalf of the U.S. pork industry. And that's what advocacy and public policy is. And it ranges from everything from international policy to state policy and everything in between.
Who are you targeting with that advocacy? Is it pork producers or consumers? Because that consumer's got to be confident in the industry.
Absolutely. So the beauty of the U.S. pork industry is we actually have two national organizations.
Yes.
And so the Pork Checkoff works on behalf of education, promotion, and research with the consumers, does a fantastic job. MPPC's job is policy. And where we focus that effort is in four policy areas. That's domestic policy in Washington, D.C. That's international policy with our trading partners and the World Trade Organization. That is corporate policy and recognizing that we have some major players out there that when they make a decision, we want to make sure they have all the facts and information so that as it impacts our producers are aware of it. And then, of course, state policy. It'd be a little remiss if I didn't acknowledge that sometimes we have states that have low pig population and high people population that make decisions that impact our industry, such as California.
Yeah, exactly. I know that NPPC is working with the State Department of Ag in California to help educate for preparedness for implementation compliance with Prop 12. Tell me about that effort.
Yeah, board gave clear direction. We want to see a smooth transition. This is going to be a tremendous impact on the state of California and the consumers there. And while we're saddened to see that and disappointed with the court's ruling, the reality is we owe it to our consumers, 40 million folks in California, to ensure that they have the availability to buy fresh pork product if and however we can. And that means working with CDFA to help understand what do they mean by the rules, need a little bit clearer guidance on some of the FAQs that they put out and the rules that they put out, and providing that guidance to our producers. Excited to see last week with our push that they announced some webinars to offer some direction, some guidance, and answer some questions, an updated FAQ document that provides some detail, but we'd sure like to see more out of that. Our job here is to continue to take the questions from the industry to CDFA to get clarity for the industry on what they need to do to comply with Proposition 12 to ensure that we get that product in there as smoothly as possible. That doesn't mean, though, that we're in love with the concept of a state like California regulating outside their borders.
July 1 is right around the corner. Can they get it implemented that fast?
That's a great question, Chip, and only CDFA can answer that for you. I think it's going to be a real struggle, though, because there's still a number of questions about that are coming from the countryside with folks who built Prop 12 compliant barns and have done everything they think they can to do it, but still have some lingering questions from CDFA that need to get answered out there. These webinars will be a huge push for it.
Exactly. It sounds to me, and as I understand it, there's about 6% of the U.S. production, roughly, that is compliant.
Could be, Chip. We actually don't know that number.
Okay.
Yep. And I think that'd be an interesting number to have, but we simply don't have it because, one, those proprietary business information, but two, there's a lot that goes into being compliant, not only with the design of the building and the stall access, but the hours and a lot of other things that come in that we're still working through. Listen, here's my big fear. We have some fantastic customers in California that may or may not have voted for this, or they may or may not have understand the implications of it. That does not mean that we want them to be without pork chops on July 4th.
Okay.
And that's something we have to work through. And given the state of our industry today and the challenges that we face economically, this isn't a time that we got to make sure we can get product in there and keep it moving.
You know, for that consumer that wants the pork chop on their grill on July 4th, I get it. That's very important.
Yep.
But what about the food truck that wants to serve bacon and eggs on the 4th of July morning? Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge for everybody.
Oh, man.
Challenge for everybody. Yep.
It really is. Okay.
Well, and I think we should use that as a shout-out here to the rest of the states around the country to let them know that elections have consequences. Take a moment to realize what it is that you're voting for and get educated, because the consequences you face could be troubling. And let's be honest, nobody wants to pay more for bacon than they have to.
Right.
And everyone wants to have access to it. We've got to make sure that happens.
That is a really good message right there, Brian. Really good. I had a conversation earlier this week with Senator Grassley.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked him about Prop 12, number one, he got worked up. He doesn't do that very often on AgriTalk.
No, he does not. Nope.
But he did. He got worked up. He was fired up about Congress's responsibility to generate legislation that would regulate interstate commerce, therefore overriding Prop 12. Support that effort?
we support effort to override Prop 12 at a federal level. Listen, the Supreme Court was clear. They said this is a problem. They said it was a problem. They just said it wasn't their problem, but they said it was Congress's to fix. We look to Congress to fix this. Board had a discussion earlier today. There's legislation out there, the EATS bill. MPPC has come out and supported that. There's some technical changes we'd like to see as part of that. We'd like for it to be bipartisan, work with our Democrat colleagues out there to get some changes as they need to see it fixed. But we've got to have a federal solution to the challenges that we face here because one, other states aren't gonna abide by this and let this go, and there could be other challenges to other industries. We've got to find a solution.
Yep. Finding solutions. There's still a lot of questions out there about Prop 12, and
sure.
And I feel like we could talk about this for 2 hours, and we're still going to be right where we're at, Brian,
yep.
In this conversation, because everybody knows what we want to see done. It's just a question of whether or not we can get there or not. We have talked a lot about disease prevention mm-hmm. on AgriTalk at World Pork Expo. One thing that I haven't talked a lot about, and I know it's still an issue, are labor issues.
Absolutely.
How are we addressing those?
Well, let's use Iowa as an example. We're here in the great state of Iowa. Unemployment's here around 2.7, 2.9%. You get out in rural Iowa, it's even lower than that. We cannot find domestic labor to fill the needs of labor in the U.S. pork industry, let alone the rest of agriculture. We call on Congress to do something about that, and the obvious fix would be year-round H-2A. Yep. And allowing to be used in the industries like the pork industry. I think we get wrapped up in overall immigration reform, understand that, but agriculture is its own unique challenge, and rural America needs the attention, and we welcome the folks that want to come in here and work. We'd love to have them. And so call on Congress to look at passing some H-2A reforms.
Yep. They passed the debt ceiling. They got that done.
Yep.
Does that give you a little hope that maybe the immigration issues could be taken up and that they actually can negotiate?
Absolutely it does.
Good.
And here's why. I believe that the congressmen and women and the senators that went to D.C. went there to do the right thing, and that includes passing immigration reform, at least for agriculture, to get the issues that we face fixed.
Yeah, absolutely. The expanding exports, it's always at the top of the list, isn't
100%.
It?
100%.
Yep. Yeah.
At the end of the day, we have a fantastic product raised by the producers right here in this room that do tremendous work, and they should have the ability to sell that internationally, and we would ask the administration to help gain access to those markets.
Yep. Brian, the industry has some challenges right now. There is no sure. question about it. Keep working hard for the producers out there because we need the leadership, and they need the guidance, and they need the voice.
The American pork producer is resilient. We'll get through this, too.
Absolutely. Brian Humphreys is the CEO of the National Pork Producers Council. We'll be back with more AgriTalk here in a moment.
Welcome to the 2023 Corn Sprint. Please be silent as the runners take their marks. And looks like one plant has already pulled into an early lead because it's been enhanced with BioPath, a biological fertilizer complement from the Mosaic Company. Wait, and the early favorite has crossed the finish line. Get the most out of your fertilizer investment. Don't forget to add BioPath to your early season application. Talk to your retailer about Mosaic Biologicals today or visit cornsprint.com.
The Scoop Podcast is where we talk about tight supply chains, emerging agronomic challenges, technology tools delivering ROI. I'm Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop and host of The Scoop Podcast. Join me as I interview leaders from across the ag retail sector. Farmers are working hard for every bushel, and their trusted advisors are by their side. Find The Scoop Podcast wherever you find podcasts so you are up to date on everything ag retail.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, we've got corn and soybeans going in different directions ahead of the USDA report. What's going on?
Yeah, on soybeans, they're getting a boost from a daily export sale. So unknown destinations came in and purchased some cargoes this morning. And as a result, that's giving us some price support. The other factor is soy oil really trading sharply to the upside. The flip side of that is that meal is trading lower, and so we're seeing quite a bit of spreading activity going on within the soy complex this morning. On the corn side of things, just kind of easing into the reports here in a half an hour and waiting. The anticipation is that corn ending stocks will go up both for old crop and new crop this month as USDA factors in some of those old crop usage numbers.
Yeah, 197,000 on that bean sale of old crop beans to unknown. Good stuff. Some pressure on wheat going into the winter wheat production report.
Yeah, the anticipation is that the winter wheat crop will get a little bit bigger in USDA's estimation. And so that's putting some pressure on, along with, you know, harvest activity that is starting to pick up in the southern plains.
Yep. Take us over to the livestock trade. The live cattle rally has restarted.
Yeah, so a couple days of price pressure there on just corrective selling, and the reality is that the cash market continues to charge higher. Wholesale beef prices continue to charge higher, and with those bullish fundamentals, the futures can't drift too far, and so we're seeing some buyer interest resurface this morning. Feeders are up on the weakness in the corn market, and then hog futures, aside from the front month June contract, they're also trading to the upside this morning.
Yeah, it's a good... good market to see there in the hogs. Brian, we'll talk to you soon. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
My whole identity had been wrapped up in being a soldier. To have that so violently ripped from me when I was wounded, I was lost for a very long time. When Wounded Warrior Project came into my life, being around the other warriors, people that had similar experiences that I did, it was a game changer for me. Having King join the group, that was the beginning of a really good friendship.
It's a good time.
I first heard about Wounded Warrior Project through CQ. And at first I was kind of like, I don't know if I qualify. But having been a part of it, it's kind of taught me that it's not just the wounds that you can see, but it's those that you can't.
When you do something like a peer support group with Wounded Warrior Project and come together from different walks of life, man, the growth is incredible. If not for Wounded Warrior Project, I really don't think that I'd be here today.
See how we help warriors combat stigma at woundedwarriorproject.org/combatstigma.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us on this Friday morning. Yeah, I know it'd normally be a free-for-all, but we've got some really, really important things happening. That conversation with Brian Humphreys, the CEO of NPPC, regarding the Prop 12 and plans around it. Davis, one of the things that really struck me in that conversation was when Brian said, the board reacted very restrained to the Supreme Court decision. They thought it through. The reaction from NPPC was driven by the board members and the ability of NPPC to tap those farmers for what the reaction should be. And the first thing that the farmers came up with was, we've got 40 million people out in California that consume more pork than any other state in the nation. We need to make sure that we've got product that those California consumers can get their hands on, whether they voted for Prop 12 or not. I thought that was very interesting take on NPPC's reaction to the Supreme Court decision. Okay, we've got big news coming next week. I'm confident that it is coming next week. And here to talk about it is Kurt Kovarik. He is the VP of Federal Affairs for the Clean Fuels Alliance America. Kurt, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing real fine. And good. It is a big week next week, isn't it, Kurt? And I love the fact that Clean Fuels Alliance, along with others, keeping your foot on the gas, keeping the issues in front of EPA as they get into the final decision-making process. Tell me about the letter that you helped to send EPA.
Sure. And first off, let me say I'm glad to hear your confidence that we'll see something next week. I hope you're right. EPA has a tendency to let us down on timing, but I like your confidence. I'm going to stick with you.
Okay, good.
With respect to the letter, yeah, this week we sent a letter to the president reminding him, this was on behalf of about 80 different entities, a lot of state soybean associations, about 5 national trade associations representing soybean crush, renderers, home heating oil industry, as well as our members. It's kind of the last effort, as you said. This proposed rule should be made final due to a court requirement at Wednesday of next week, June 14th. We're hopeful that it's on track and will be final. But the message that we sent to the president was very simple, and that is the fuel that we produce has spurred a whole new industry in terms of renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel, and that's being supported by 20 or so announcements in expanded oilseed crush facilities located across 10 states at a value of about $6 billion. All of this is predicated on EPA continuing the momentum that they started in 2022 in providing higher volumes under the renewable fuel standard for biomass-based diesel. All of that is at stake. So the message to the president was, if you want to achieve your climate goals here today, now, in some of the hardest to decarbonize transportation sectors using our fuel, the volumes have to be higher. If you want energy security, promote domestic energy production through higher volumes of the RFS. Don't allow ourselves to be further susceptible to price spikes because of what happens in Russia or the Middle East or in Venezuela. Put your foot on the gas and promote domestic homegrown renewable biomass-based diesel by finalizing rules that acknowledge what's happening in the industry and continue to press forward with higher volumes.
It's that environmental argument that I hope is catching the attention not only of the staff at the White House, but Administrator Regan's staff at EPA. Everyone. I hope it's catching everyone's attention because from the very beginning, the Biden administration has made it loud and clear that at every agency, clean burning fuels, the environment, climate change, climate smart initiatives are the base of the decisions.
That's right. It feels like there is no other issue as important to this administration, kind of integrated into every policy decision, than addressing climate, right?
Yep.
So when we have railroads coming to us, or ocean-going cargo ships, or home heating industries, all begging for low-carbon liquid fuels because there is no other alternative. There is no other cost-competitive alternative on the horizon. And delivering 75% less carbon-emitting fuels in the tank today should mean something to this administration. So I you're exactly right. You know, why this isn't a no-brainer, an obvious, hey, look at what we're delivering here. Let's utilize this as much as we possibly can. Let's support the build-out of soybean crush throughout the Midwest. Why not have the availability of those oils here and that soybean meal here for our livestock industry rather than exporting that whole bean? All of the ripple effects of what's happening for the environment, for energy security, for rural economic development, it's all positive.
Yes, gotcha. You know, and there is still time to have an influence on that final decision and for this message to work. From the time that the proposed finals on the RVOs was sent to the OMB, there were 35 meetings scheduled on this, and there are 15 remaining to take place between today and Tuesday. So there is still time for the letter to have an influence. Now, Kurt, explain why the RVO is so important. I mean, if the product is being produced and there's demand for the product, it's going to be sold. So why is recognition of a of the ability to produce more, why is that recognition so important in the RV?
Well, I'll say this. Yeah, that's a great question. And I should have mentioned, when I talk about the $6 billion in soybean crush expansion, mm-hmm. that's all been announced. Some of it's been, you know, ground has been broken, but some of it hasn't. And so the message is, we have to send the proper market signals for that to all come to fruition. I mean, we've seen a lot of renewable diesel announcements, both from my members and outside of my members. To some extent, that's a little bit aspirational. You know, that commitment, that's a huge financial commitment. When a renewable diesel facility costs $1 billion, you want to make sure that you've got some certainty in policy that the rug isn't going to be pulled out from under you in 6 or 12 months when it takes a decade to get a return on these investments. The same is true for those soy crush expansions that I was mentioning. Those could easily be, there's already talk of uncertainty about some of those happening because of lack of policy certainty, particularly on the renewable volume obligation. So while rail may want the fuel, while aviation may want the fuel, while ocean going may want the fuel, they need to get it in a quantity large enough that it makes a difference, as economically competitive as possible. And sending the right market signals through the RVO is a critical piece to making sure that the investments are made in the feedstock, so that's available to our producers, so that can be producing quantities to get it to the customers that want it. It's just one component. State policies, right. Corporate policies, you know, tax policy, all of them combined make this work. And pulling out the leg on one part of that chair and the whole chair crumbles.
Yep. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some new state policies out there. What's happening in Nebraska? They've got a new biodiesel tax credit, right? To the retailer?
Yes. That's right. Nebraska. Okay. I can't speak specifically to the policy. We've got a separate state team, but I can tell you this. I'm not aware of another state that was able to first conceive and adopt such a strong, robust pro-biofuels policy all in the same calendar year. And that's a real testament to the advocates in Nebraska, the policymakers recognizing the benefit of the policy to say, you know what, this is a great idea. We want to support Nebraska-made of low carbon fuels. Let's incentivize it so we can get it to the customers and use it right here in Nebraska. Yeah. Applaud the governor, all the policymakers, and our advocates on the ground to get that done. It's a huge feat.
Governor,
it's a great
Peelan
accomplishment.
Out there. Governor Peelan,
that's right.
Out there is the one that signed that into law. And what it does is it provides a 14 cent per gallon credit. Looking at their press release, 14 cent per gallon credit for the sale of biodiesel. Credit is applied to a Nebraska fuel retailer's income tax liability. Total funding for the program is $5 million. I mean, incentive to make that product available out there, which is gets us back to the RFS and the mandates, the RVOs. That's all about market access.
That's right.
Gaining a level playing field with the with fossil fuel-based diesels, correct?
That's exactly right. Making it available to the customer. The customer knows, hey, this was produced by a farmer down the road. It's better for the environment. It's better for my automobile. It's great for the economy. Of course, I'm going to choose it.
Yep. You know, one of the reasons that I'm saying that I think it is going to come next week, number one is the court order. Okay, come on, EPA. Follow along here. There are rules that you need to follow, too. The other thing is that those meetings – on the RVOs, the last one is scheduled for the 13th. So let's hope that last meeting is the final decision and it goes our way with some bigger bio-based diesel RVOs. Kurt, thanks, buddy. I appreciate you, man.
You bet. Always glad to be with you. I hope you have a great weekend.
Oh, you too. Kurt Kavorek, VP of Federal Affairs for the Clean Fuels Alliance America. Davis and I will be right back.
I spent a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent
wildfires.
Hi, I'm Paul Niefer, a CPA. Join me every week on the Farm CPA podcast by Top Producer for conversations about the top trends in farm management, tax issues, succession planning, policy implementations, and more. Each week, I visit with business-minded farmers and ag experts for lively and in-depth conversations. Subscribe to the Farm CPA podcast by Top Producer, available on your preferred podcast platform, and listen to a new episode every Tuesday.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature. DiscoverTheForest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey, I'm Reba McEntire. Growing up in Oklahoma, I had big dreams of becoming a successful country music singer. But I also knew the odds were against me and that I needed an education to fall back on. Studying never got in the way of my dreams. In fact, school gave me lots of opportunities I wouldn't have had otherwise with my career. Please stay in school and try your best. You never know where a good education might take you. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Air Force.
Farming is all about community. And nobody understands how rural communities share life's joys and sorrows, risks and rewards better than the Beck family. They know that farming is important and fulfilling work, but at times it can also be dangerous. That's why season 2 of Beck's Day Ever is dedicated to exploring the stories of rural rescuers who protect and serve their communities. Head online to beckshybrids.com/beckstayever to watch new episodes. After all, the Beck's Day Ever is the one where everyone gets home safe.
I'm Tyne Morgan, host of U.S. Farm Report. Join me each weekend as we explore the news and issues that matter the most to agriculture. We know this past year has been challenging in many ways, but as agriculture continues to adapt, we are right there with you. From markets to weather, each weekend we take a deep dive into what matters most. Join me each weekend for U.S. Farm Report, timely, trusted tradition.
If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. By wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers right away. If you're testing your blood sugar 4 or more times per day, injecting insulin 3 or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, call the Diabetic Health Hotline today and learn about the latest CGM technology. A CGM can immediately reduce pain. It's accurate, easy to use, and helps you make better diabetes treatment decisions. And if you have Medicare, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Plus, get free shipping, and we'll bill your insurance company for you. Call now to receive your new continuous glucose monitor at little or no out-of-pocket cost.
Paid for by U.S. Medical Supply.
Call 800-556-9015. That's 800-556-9015. Again, 800-556-9015. That's 800-556-9015.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, until one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment.
800-860-1269. 800-860-1269. 800-860-1269. That's 800-860-1269. Again, 800-860-1269.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Friday, Friday. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here with Chip Flory. Bro.
Yeah.
some great conversations right there. There's a lot coming down the pike right now. Oh. It's hard keeping our hands around all of it.
Yeah, yeah. And when it comes to what is going on in the hog industry, the conversations that we had while we were down there, the Farmer Forum on Wednesday morning was fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's when we first got a hint of NPPC's plans for Prop 12. It was in that conversation. Pat Hoard, a producer from Ohio, is on the NPPC board of directors. And he was in the room when that decision was made to, let's not overreact. First thing we're going to think about are those consumers out in California. And after I heard that from Brian Humphries, I mm-hmm. thought back to the conversation that we had with Pat Hoard and just how thoughtful he was as he was making those comments on Wednesday morning's show. It connected dots in reverse for me, and it all made sense all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It sounds like attitudes were generally pretty positive among producers down at World Pork Expo, though.
Well, yeah, we talked about it with Jennifer Scheich yesterday. Well, you want to talk about a resilient group of people.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what this group is. I mean, the financial headwinds are real. The industry is going to change. They know that there are challenges ahead, and it's just like, I don't want to make fun of it or be flippant about it, mm-hmm. but it's almost like the people there were, well, at least it gives us something to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gives us challenges to overcome. Gives us goals, sets the priority list. We've got a to-do list. Let's start checking them off. One of the things, top of the list, is let's get back to profitability, which is going to take a restructuring. It honestly is. The conversation, you guys, the conversation that we had yesterday afternoon on the show, Dave Delaney and Billy Polovin, from Partners for Production Agriculture by Ever.ag, was fantastic. It made me think all the way home, Davis. Mm-hmm. It's we need to the restructuring that is starting and is happening in the industry is something that we need to stay on top of and really make sure that word is getting out on changes that are happening.
Indeed. Some changes happening in about, I don't know, 6 minutes or so. Some updates to the World Ag Supply and Demand updates, estimates. What you got for us?
Okay, let's talk about the domestic numbers here, U.S. carryover estimates, old and new crop. The average trade guess on wheat for old crop carryover, 606 million bushels. That would be up 8 million bushels from last month. On new crop, 569 million bushels is the average trade guess. That would be up 13 million bushels from last month, but it would still be down about 40 million bushels from this year. So trend in the bullish direction for wheat. On corn, average trade guess on old crop, 1.449 billion bushels. That would be up about 32 million bushels from last month. On new crop corn, 2.254 billion bushels. Month to month, that would be up 32 million bushels from May and up about 800 million bushels from this year. Trend clearly in the bears' favor there. On soybeans, 223 million bushels is the average trade guess on old crop soybean carry. That would be up 8 million bushels from last month. For new crop, the average trade guess is 345 million bushels. That would be up 10 million bushels from last month. and up about 122 million bushels from this year. So that's why, a big part of the reason why, when we talk corn and soybean risk looking forward into the new crop marketing year, Davis, that's why so many of the guest analysts on the afternoon show have been leaning negative on the new crop markets.
Okay, very good. But once again, those are out. Coming up here real quick. Yeah.
Yeah. Winter wheat crop estimate. Mm-hmm. Second survey based estimate of the year is also coming our way. The all wheat crop projection, which is still including, we're not going to get an estimate on spring wheat. We need to wait a little longer before we get that. But the projection on all wheat, the average trade guess, 1.672 billion. That compares to 1.659 billion in May. So that's up 13 million bushels. On the winter wheat crop estimate, which is 100% survey based, the average trade estimate, 1.143 billion bushels. That would be up from 1.130 billion bushels. So there's that 13 million bushel increase right there. So leaning to the upside on the crop estimates as well.
Yeah. Real quick, Chip, we didn't get to this in the news. In 2022, the U.S. exported more than 450,000 metric tons of cheese, valued at approximately $2.3 billion. Dude. USDA's ERS Dude. Reports top markets include Mexico, South Korea, Japan, Australia, and Canada.
Dude, export all we can right now. We are in a situation where the production is so high that we are dumping milk again, Davis. We're dumping milk in manure pits. We're dumping milk in fields because production is way above our processing capabilities. That's happening in Wisconsin. It's happening, like, next door. Oh, talk about a killer, killer, killer to have to do that. Come back this afternoon. We'll have the report details and reaction with Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net.
You can't spell farm without us. Farmers deserve an ag lender invested in their success and the future of their operations. That's ARM. Ag Resource Management has the experience you want in a lender. Operating lines, crop insurance, real estate loan, and equipment leasing services. Our proven local team works with you to keep you growing this season and for seasons to come. We finance agriculture differently. Call 855-545-1199 to find a true partner at ARM. ARM is an equal opportunity provider.
On the internet, there are tons of special networking websites, but one stands apart. This one saves lives. It's matchingdonors.com. Matchingdonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. Did you know in the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant? If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're someone in need of an organ transplant, please.